www.ankouran.org or by calling 202-518-1213. WPFW, where we are changing the world one broadcast and one community event at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
All right, now. Okay, y'all. Well, you know, this isn't Roach Brown. This is his co-host, Nikechi Taifa, attorney and counselor at law. And Roach and Martine will be on. They're just having a little trouble logging in this morning because y'all know Mercury is still in retrograde. But it's going to be all right. So, again, this is Nikechi Taifa, and I'm just so honored and blessed and thrilled to have the guest that we have on here today, none other than the fabulous, the phenomenal Clinton Lacy. We're talking about someone who is not a stranger to D.C. I'm going to let him give his own little bio. But, you know, we're talking about someone who's been in the trenches of the criminal justice system here in D.C., dealing with youth services, dealing with credible messengers, any and everything related to uplifting formerly incarcerated people. That's Clinton Lacy. How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing great. It's always an honor to be with you, to have an opportunity to speak with you and to be present with the family listening, you know, locally, nationally, internationally. So honored to be here.
Yeah, locally, nationally, and internationally. So Roach always starts off with Grapevine. And before we get into the specifics of Clint, what you're doing now, what you've done in the past, let's just do a little off-the-cuff Grapevine here in terms of an issue that is so very pertinent right here, right now, current events, current issues right here in Washington, D.C., and that is none other than federal troops being deployed to the streets of Washington, D.C. I want to know just what's your perspective on that, because, you know, we talk about Grapevine and there's a lot of Grapevine going on around here. What do you think? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that we really need to be concerned about? I know I'm concerned, but I just want to hear your views on this current issue confronting this city of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you know, there's so much to say about how horrible it is. It is just another in a litany of, I would say, frame as acts of desperation. And when I say desperation, I don't just mean this particular president and his current issues and need for distractions, right? But I'm talking about a larger desperation in terms of this insatiable need or desire for power and control and manipulation, right? And really just exploiting and ultimately oppressing people. Certainly the story of Washington, D.C. and the people of the district and the Black Native Washingtonians and others who love this land, who love this place, who have this deep history, are particularly it's particularly disrespectful, harmful, and really ultimately oppressive to people who have been fighting for self-determination for so many years. And so, but this desperation, I think, speaks to something that's happening, that's being talked about here and that has begun to happen here, but it's happening globally. Mm-hmm. Right. And so this need to control people, to suppress people for your own selfish needs and desires to be in control, to be in power. And so Just on that level alone, I put it in the context of an international process that's taken place around the globe to people of color, to oppressed peoples whose land, whose culture, whose people are under assault.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, you started off talking about that it might even be a distraction or something along those lines. And I think that the number one of the big issues in the news is the Epstein files. And I think it might be a distraction to keep the public's attention away from whatever might be Trump complicity with whatever is in those files. You know, the crime rate in D.C., all the statistics have said, has been going down. It's not to say that there aren't any issues. Look, I mean, you know, there are issues. I mean, I can name one thing right now I just recently heard about, but not to the extent where they need to bring in the National Guard or the federalized, the FBI. FBI walking the streets of Washington, D.C., they don't know this city. Many of them, many of these federal enforcements are from all over the country and might not have ever even encountered a Black person before. And to put them in our neighborhoods with our youth, I'm just not feeling that.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's a distraction. And it's like a real, act of deception to try to say, okay, so the real criminal, the criminalization of the people of D.C., right? When we know that the statistics are showing that crime is down in D.C., it's down nationally. And really, that relates to what we're going to be talking about later, too, and to why is that a fact? Why is crime down? And what role does the community play in that? And so it is the exact opposite of this action is really painting a picture or telling a story that is in direct opposition to the truth in terms of what's happening here and how communities are coming together and have worked on the ground and on varying levels to be part of that drop in crime and drop in violence. And so for him to turn around and for the powers that be to turn around and continue to weaponize their apparatus towards the people, it's a distraction, but these are real people, these are real lives. There's real implications of weaponizing and putting soldiers on the ground in the district to address an issue that does not exist in the way that they are framing it. Yeah, there still are issues. We know that. But what we've been working towards collectively is community-rooted solutions, right, to address these issues. And so this is moving in the totally opposite direction of the movement to further capacitate the village with the resources it needs to raise its children, to keep safe streets, et cetera. This is moving in the opposite direction by bringing in troops and trying to telling the lie, painting the picture that the city and the law enforcement apparatus of the city is being the implications of the apparatus, the district's police department, et cetera. The Trump administration is essentially saying that they can't handle what's going on here. So it's just overall, I think, another example of the worst expression of desperate people who have power.
So, Claire, hey, guess who has joined us on the phone? Our host, Roach Brown, host of Crossroads. Roach, we took a moment to do grapevine talking about this current issue in D.C., but I'm going to turn it over to you because you're the man, and I know that you're on the line now. So, Roach Brown, take it over.
You did a good job, and you're doing a good job, Akeisha. We just had a little difficulty, technical difficulty, but we're working it out. I want to thank you for joining us, Clint Lacy, because you my kind of guy. I mean, man, we ran into you the other night over at Baba Saleem Hilton's retirement and birthday party. And, man, you gave a speech. In fact, I thought most of the people wouldn't understand where you were coming from, man. You know, but you brought it on. You brought it home, right across home plate, Jack. Everybody looked up to it and appreciate where you were coming from. I want to thank you for what you've been doing all these years, Clint. I mean, man, you're on the front line. But before we go any further, I wanted to do the grapevine, Akeisha.
Okay, you can go on and do the official grapevine. We did a little unofficial grapevine.
Go on. Hello, hello. Trump calls for legislation to end no cash bail in U.S. cities as part of a crime crackdown. Trump urged Congress to end no cash bail policies. U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia advocates charging more juveniles as adults. Critics say cash bail reinforces racial and economic disparities and create a two-tier justice system. President Donald Trump said on Monday he will ask Congress to tighten U.S. crime laws as part of a crackdown on violent crime in the District of Columbia and other U.S. cities. Trump said Congress should end reforms in Chicago, New York, and some other cities that allow some accused criminals to get out of jail ahead of time of their trial dates without posting a cash bail. Every place in the country where you have no cash bail is a disaster, Trump said at a White House press conference, where he announced that he was putting the U.S. Capitol's police department under federal control and deploying 800 National Guards. DHS announces migrant outdoor detention facility. Oh, boy. On the heels of the opening of the migrant detention facility in Florida, known as Alligator Alcatraz, the Department of Homeland Security has announced a second facility is coming to Indiana. Today, we're announcing a new partnership with the state of Indiana to expand detention to bed spaces by 1,000 beds. Thanks to Governor Braun for his partnership to help remove the worst of the worst out of our country, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem said. Oh, boy. Oh, here we go. Punishment beyond prison. The U.S. has a staggering 1.9 million people behind bars, but even this number doesn't capture the true reach of the criminal legal system. It's more accurate to look at the 5.5 million people under all of the nation's mass punishment systems, which includes not only incarceration, but also probation and parole. The FBI moves to dispatch 120 agents to D.C. streets as Trump vows crackdown on crime. The Trump administration has assigned FBI agents to work overnight shifts to combat carjacking and other crimes. On Monday, this topic compared the forthcoming action against D.C. crime to his administration's aggressive crackdown against illegal immigration at the southern border, saying on Sunday that he plans to immediately clear out the city's homeless population and take swift action against crime. Last week, Trump ordered federal law enforcement agents from several agencies to be deployed on city streets and called for more juveniles to be charged.
Trump demands homeless people immediately. Oh, what is that? Trump demands homeless people immediately move out of Washington, D.C. And this is a trip. The Republican president had also trailed a news conference for Monday about his plans to make the city safer and more beautiful than it ever was. Mayor Muriel Bowser, a Democrat, said, "We are not experiencing a crime spike. In fact, all the figures indicate that the crime rate in D.C. has gone down in the past year or two. So there's no emergency." Trump signed an order last month making it easier to arrest homeless people. And he last week ordered the federal law enforcement into the streets of Washington, D.C. "The homeless have to move out immediately," Trump wrote on his social media site, Truth Social, on Sunday. "We will give you places to stay, but far from the Capitol. The criminals you don't have to move out, we're going to put you in jail where you belong. This is civil commitment. Folks will be locked up, detained, and incarcerated for months, years, without any charges and can't get any relief. If you're going to move the homeless people out of Washington, D.C., where are they going? Where will they stay? How will they be support themselves?" This is off the chain. The specifics of the president's plans are not clear, but in a 2022 speech, he proposed moving homeless people to high-quality tents on inexpensive land outside cities while providing access to bathrooms and medical professionals. On Friday, Trump ordered federal agencies, including the U.S. Park Police, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the FBI, and the U.S. Marshals Service into Washington, D.C. to curb what he called total out of control levels of crime. And let me just throw this in, folks, that Washington, D.C. has more law enforcement and police than any city in the world. Every major police department, national and internationally, has an office base or headquarters in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is over-policed with all of the federal agencies, private agencies, and you can even rent you a cop. So we don't need cops per se. We need programs to get these kids and people involved. Unemployed jobs reduce crime, and we know that. California names the fifth state prison to be closed because of failing inmate population. Now the prison is on track to close in 2026. Governor Newsom's Correction Department said on Tuesday that the prison is no longer needed because of the state's falling incarceration rate. And I will close with this for Grapevine to say, the world would not be destroyed by those who do evil or bad things. It'd be destroyed by those who watch them without doing or saying anything. And that's been the Grapevine. Thank you. Now we go back to Nikichi and our good friend, Flint Lacey. I want to call you Dr. Lacey, man, because you was a doctor to me, man.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. You've definitely been a mentor and a role model and a teacher to me. So if I'm Doc, I guess I have to call you Professor.
Ah, ain't that something? I've been called that before, but it wasn't in a pleasant tone.
And that to me and to many people.
Go ahead, Nikisha, you can finish. Go ahead.
So we were just kicking it, dealing with what was going on in D.C. But let me just mention, I was at Baba Salim Hilton's event as well. You were there, Roach. In fact, the WPFW was out there. Joni was there. Other folk from PFW. Clinton was there. And I hadn't seen him in quite a long time. So it was really very refreshing to see him and to hear him and the like. So I didn't get a chance to go over his credentials, his bio, or anything like that. So, Roach, if you want to do that, if you want Clint to take the opportunity to let the WPFW listening audience know just who he is, as phenomenal as he is, let's go on and do that now.
Go ahead, Clint. In fact, I met Clint some time ago, me and a guy named Stanley Mitchell. Clint was a director of DYRS, the Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services, him and Linda Harley Harper. And man, we miss her. She was quite a lady. And I was surprised when I met Clint down there as a director, and he was talking about love. He running the juvenile institution and the juvenile criminal justice system. And he talking about, let's lead by love. I said, this guy got to be crazy. He's not bringing love into a correctional facility. But brother, you did it, you done it, and you keep on doing it. And I want to say what you're doing with the credible messages, what you did with DYRS. He used to be in charge of the Department of Probation and Parole, I think, up in New York City for a while. He was a part of the mayor's cabinet, Muriel Bowser's cabinet. So Clint has a tremendous track record, history, and we both got a gentleman that we both love and respect beyond, you can say, Eddie Ellis. Mm-hmm. Eddie, in fact, you remind me of Eddie Ellis in some ways, Clint, and you haven't stopped or deterred from what you've been doing through the years, man. And I just was going to say, thank you for agreeing to come on our show to share your information. And what's going on in Washington, D.C. dovetails into what you're doing with the credible messengers. You're working on the front line with our youth. You know what it takes to get our youth on the right track. It don't take incarceration or prison or take them to court as adults. And I just want to throw this in before I throw the mic to you, Clint. Is that we came down to New Beginnings, a juvenile facility, and you allowed us to do a 2-hour broadcast live from the juvenile correctional facility. And we had the residents inside talking and participating on a radio show. And I think that was the first time we were allowed a media outlet to come into a juvenile facility to interview the kids and to do a radio show from there. And I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And that show was really the dynamic, Clint. And what you've been doing and trying to do, you're ahead of the game, man. A lot of folks don't believe you can use love to turn people around. And we got this new prosecutor, Jeanine Pirro from New York City. She's talking about locking up our juveniles
as
adults. We know that D.C. does not have his own prison system. So our juveniles will be sent all over the country. When I came down in New Beginnings, I was working with two twins, and they sent one to South Dakota, Southwest. And he called me and said, Mr. Brown, what's a Native American? He was up there near Indian Reservation, 17 years old, never heard of a Native American, and didn't know what to do, who to turn to, whatever. But you connected us, Clint, and I mean, these guys will be sent all over America. They already have trouble in D.C. trying to find their mothers and fathers who's in the street. Now they're going across the country. And go ahead, Clint, I don't want to go on my soapbox, but I just want to say, you want to explain, wait a minute, I see Mayuki Williams. We got a pitch partner, Clint, so we have to raise funds to stay on the air. Go ahead, Mayuki.
All right. Okay.
Well, this is an engaging and really important conversation, again, especially what's taking place right now here in Washington, D.C. And Roach, I just love what you just said, that it's not the one individual bad person that's going to make things go bad. It is those people who are watching what's happening and do nothing. I understand that everyone can't go to juvenile facilities. I understand that everyone cannot go to every protest or every vigil, but everyone certainly can support WPFW and give voice to independent media and give a platform for Roach Brown and for Clinton Lacey and Nkechi and Martine Brown all to have a voice to talk about these things that are critical to all of us. Please don't delay. 202-588-9739. We want to thank Leonora Winters from Owings, Maryland, who's already started us off and it's going to get us to go. We only now have about $600 to go. We can do that, but we need for you to please step up and make a pledge and think about becoming a sustainer, please. If you just give WPFW $20 a month and think about how through the course of a month you spend $20. If you give $20 a month, you're putting $5 a week into the jukebox so you can make sure Crossroads remains here and WPFW remains strong. 202-588-9739. 1-800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. Cash App is $WPFWFM, and you can text WPFWFM to 801-801. Please don't be a person who watches history go by and didn't do anything. We are living in a crisis today, right now, and you can do something about it. Support WPFW to ensure the voice of justice and peace remains. 202-588-9739.
You know, this is timely, Clint, to have you on the show. As a former director of the Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services, and with all these changes and laws that's being proposed by the White House and the Trump administration, you understand and know the youth problem from inside and out as an administrator, as an executive, as a member of the mayor's cabinet, as a community activist. You wore all these hats, man, so you know this topic intimately in terms of juvenile correction and the criminal justice. What's your take on what's happening right now in Washington, D.C. with these bills coming out or orders coming out from the White House?
Yeah, and I want to connect that question or the answer to that in terms of what's happening in D.C. As you said, how that dovetails into this larger conversation, you know, about credible messenger and about engaging young people and communities, right? And so you mentioned Dr. Martin Luther King, you mentioned Eddie Ellis, right? Pillars, like huge giants in the space. And I had the opportunity to be mentored by Eddie and guided in some important ways, going back to the 90s in New York City, where I started working with young people at Rikers Island. And so it was really through that work that really grounded me and began to teach me about what we now call mass incarceration and what was called then prison industrial complex. Same thing, right? The growth of this use and weaponization of incarceration of people and of communities. And so it connects to today in an important way. The other person you mentioned, of course, Dr. King, who said that true justice is an act of love in public and public policy. Right. And public institutions. And so of all the institutions and agencies and systems that we have in this society, the so-called justice system, the legal system, is a place that has been not only absent of love, but weaponized to do harm. And so what we see happening in D.C. really goes back to the roots of this nation, even before it was a nation, during the colonial period, the roots of the harms and the oppression and the weaponization and criminalizing people goes back to history.
Yes.
And so really what we see is, you know, going back to what happened to the Native peoples, you mentioned the Native Americans, what happened to them being displaced, uprooted, suffering genocide, et cetera. And then during slavery of African people and post-slavery, Jim Crow, the development of police as we know it, right? The development of a legal system, the development of the concept of social control, controlling people, not public safety, not keeping people well and safe, controlling people. And so through the years, this has been the struggle, the civil rights struggle, the human rights struggle has been fighting to turn back these horrible laws and policies that incarcerate people, that jail people, that cage people, right, to fight for our freedoms. And we made significant progress, although there was so much more work to do. But what we see now is a turning back to the very mentality and practices that existed in 1860.
100 years ago,
It's the same, kidnapping people, robbing people, making people have their papers, show their papers when they walk down the street, weaponizing the government and the military, right, to police and incarcerate people. So we see that happening right now in D.C. And what that does, it runs against the very movement that we have been engaged in for generations. You know, so the work that I had the opportunity to do at DYRS and that we continue to do stands on the shoulders of giants like yourself, right? Giants like Eddie Ellis, giants who resisted, and there's thousands of names we could call who have resisted this move for social control and to seek real justice. So real justice for us then looks like the opposite of what's happening. It doesn't look like growing and federalizing this massive military apparatus to control and police and incarcerate people, right? To lower the age, to incarcerate and prosecute babies, children, as adults. And the treatment of adults is unfair and unjust in the first place. Yes. And then to treat young people in that way, right, is just that more horrible. So everything about what's happening is taking us backwards. It is a counter to everything we believe in and what the fact and the data shows actually works to create safe communities.
Yeah,
so if they were serious about public safety, we wouldn't be doing this. So we know that's not the issue. We know that's not the objective. Yeah. The objective is to control and to take land and resources and displace and marginalize Black folk, folks of color, poor folk, which is happening internationally. For us, the credible messenger work then, like what we really embraced when we got to DYRS and was to say the answer's in the community. And the answer is in the village, right? The proverb says it takes a village to raise a child. It doesn't say it takes a police department or it takes a militarized federal government. It says it takes a village. So who is the village? The village are the people. So what we tried to do was say, we're going to engage and resource the people on the ground. And among those people, those who had been most marginalized, those who themselves had suffered incarceration, who had been part of or impacted by the legal system, we call them credible messengers because they had the credibility to connect with our young people. Credibility, not just through their shared life experiences of incarceration or being caught in cycles of various behavior and activities in the streets, right? Which are part of a larger issue of oppression of communities, multi-generational oppression. But their stories of healing and restoration, right? That they wanted to reach and engage their young people and families. And so at DYRS, we were able to resource organizations to hire who were run by credible messengers, right? People, again, who have shared life experience, but who are dedicated and passionate about sharing and engaging to support young people. So for us, it's more than just a program. It's the very opposite of what we see happening now in DC and happening in other parts of the country when they're turning back to military-oriented, police-oriented so-called solutions, right? That there's no data to show that they work. They've never worked.
That's
They've
right.
caused
Right.
higher crime rates. They've had higher recidivism rates, not lower. Our work, our collective work, has lowered crime, has lowered recidivism, documented, because what we've done is given resources or help to deliver resources to the people on the ground who love our young people, who love our community, who can connect to them, who can reach them and help move them in a way of having hope, of having a sense of possibility, of learning conflict resolution, of developing healthy coping skills, of developing a sense of a future orientation, that there's something possible for them, of seeing themselves as important, valued, loved members of a community, right? So that's more than a program. It's more than just credible messenger. I think what we're talking about and what we need now more than ever today is a paradigm shift, right? Like before Trump, we needed a paradigm shift. Before Trump, we needed a decrease in the current reliance on the legal system and an increase in reliance and investment on community, on the village, on credible messengers, on people on the ground in the community who love the community. We already needed that. But now, since Trump, you know, because it was bad enough what the Clinton administration did legally in terms of drug policy and a number of things. We know about massive
crime bill. Crime bill, 1994.
Right. So that's nothing new for us. Like, this has been generational. But at this point in time, oh, man, the gloves are off. There's no, it's not even packaged in a way to try to make people think, other than those who are interested in oppression and social control, or those who are so desperate that they're going to cling to him and what he's doing. And so now more than ever, we need this paradigm shift. We need a drastic change in the very notion of what justice is and how do we bring safety to our communities. And we know the answer is in the community, and that's what we have to continue to fight for.
Well, you know, real quick, can I just make a quickie clarification? Because the name Eddie Ellis has come up many times, and we're in D.C. There's another a young Eddie Ellis here in D.C. who's a formerly incarcerated person.
That's
who's
right.
On the front lines of criminal legal system reform and the like. But the Eddie Ellis we're referring to is the elder who is now an ancestor from New York who really was his persona was like the genesis of this whole movement to correct our systems. I just want to make sure all props to the young Eddie Ellis who's here.
Right.
In DC, but the one that we're talking about right now was the elder Eddie Ellis, who was on WPFW's sister station, WBAI, in New York for years and years and years. So going back to y'all.
Thanks for pointing that out. That's so true. We do have a strong brother Eddie Ellis doing the work right now on the front lines. Yes. And Eddie, that you know, as you just said, had been a Black Panther, was wrongfully convicted, framed under counterintelligence program COINTELPRO, and sentenced in New York State. Did some 24 years in prison, but while there, created think tanks inside of the prison.
That's right.
And to put together so much of the work that we seek to continue. And he came home in 92 or early or late 92, early 93, and began the Center for New Leadership and continued to push this work forward. So we're just trying to take the baton from Eddie and others, the other giants on whose shoulders we stand to push this work forward.
You know, while you were talking, Clint, I was asking myself, you've been in this field for years, man, and you're passionate and you're committed. And somebody meets you, they can see the passion and the drive in your eyes. How do you feel when you hear all this stuff being coming out of the White House about locking up our kids? In fact, I just realized that Jeanine Pirro, who was appointed the U.S. Attorney for Washington, D.C., her husband was pardoned in 21 by Trump. He had 34 felonies. Conspiracy and tax evasion, and he had now they made her the U.S. Attorney for Washington D.C. and they're talking about locking up our juveniles as adults. When we came down to New Beginnings, I didn't see no white kids there. So we talked. I went back to juvenile court, sitting there for 2 days, and I didn't see not one juvenile white defendant, not one. When I came out of New Beginnings and we did a 2-hour radio show down there, we didn't see not one white kid. And they talking about locking up kids and taking them to court as adults will give them these impossible sentences and send them to South Dakota, all over America, which further devastate our community, our families.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you see this and you know that this ain't but some jiggy boogie? You know, employment, social services, jobs reduce crime, not incarceration.
Yeah, it's so, you know, it makes you angry. It's painful. But at the same time, you know, like I went in college, I didn't study the legal system, right? I didn't know much about it until I started working with young people. I studied history and political science, right? And so I had a chance to look at the movements of people in this country and other places. And it's right out of their playbook. Like, that's what this move is, right out of the playbook, to criminalize young people. The babies. It's not a new thing. It's an ugly, devastating, horrible thing. But it's something that has been done before, and they're bringing it back and as a way to further break down the family, break down the community, break down the spirit and the will of us who have been engaged in this multi-generational struggle. Piro, who's now in that position, you couldn't have picked a worse person and track record to put in the position to be the federal prosecutor for the district.
Oh my God!
Right, like right out of central casting in this damn movie. Right, an avid just 100% Trump supporter, no matter what he says, what he does, and the hypocrisy of it all, as you just mentioned, in terms of his issues, legal issues and behavior and lack of integrity and character, right? And those of so much of that crew who protect each other but attack and oppress people in communities like DC. And so I think it's horrible, but it's something that we have to face, we have to resist, we have to see it for what it is. And we have to continue to fight for our young people. You know, when we were at DYRS, the young people charged as adults were sitting in the adult jail on a 23-hour lockdown. Right. And, you know, they couldn't move. If they moved, the whole jail had to shut down. So we fought with advocates and others in the city. A lot of great people came together in DYS. We supported and fought for those young people to be released out of that jail and brought over to our facility at New Beginnings. And we got them over there as a way to pull them out of that adult atmosphere, right? To improve their living conditions, their nutrition, their education, their engagement. And so now, and who opposed that? Back then was the U.S. Attorney's Office, right? And when children would turn 18, they would advocate to come get them, to pull them out, to send them away. So it's just such an ugly, vicious, hateful set of policies and practices. For what reason? Because there is no data to show that this has made anyone or any place safer. It certainly has only made the young people themselves more vulnerable, is raised the recidivism rates. It's not like they go away to the Bureau of Prisons and come home healthier, better, well-positioned. And so the overall policy is just a failed policy, but one that is being implemented, not just, I would say, because people are mistaken about what works. I think it's much worse than that. I don't think this is a mistake or a miscalculation about what makes communities safe. I think this is a nasty, racist, vicious policy to hurt, to harm, to control.
We don't tend to connect the dots between the overinvestment in police resources and the underinvestment of resources in our community. We don't connect those those dots, and that is absolutely what needs to happen.
All right, we'll go back to our pitch buddy, My Yuki Williams. Come on, pitch, buddy.
Well, Roach, you can help me tell your folks why they should support you at 202-588-9739. How would you feel if this platform wasn't available for you to share with people all the important information, critical information that you share with you and your guests?
You know, this is, like what Clint said, this hurts, my Yuki. Sometimes we do these shows and it hurts. This show hurts. When you see all the stuff that's coming out of the White House, and Clint been doing this for 30, 40 years, and Nikichi, we've all been in this for decades. I mean, we know what the answers are because we're right there on the front line. But to talk about locking up our kids and take them to trial as adults and getting them 50, 70, and 100 years, and they come out, their family's already devastated before they go into prison. They don't have anything when they come out. And they're talking about, and the crime rate has gone down in Washington, D.C. In every category, it's gone down. And the president has the authority in the event of emergency to take over control of the police department. But it's not an emergency. And we're talking about black folks, black kids, no cash bomb, locking up our kids at 17 and 18 as adults and sending them all across America. This is further destroying or destruction of our family, our community. And you got people who risk their lives, like Clint and Keech and all these folks working with the credible mention. They're doing it, the damnness. They make a difference and save some lives. And here we come out, somebody can take a pen and destroy all of that and further lock up men and women. And our young kids, they got curfews they implemented in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Clint. And they should have, and there's no place for these kids to go. The churches and schools should be open in the evening and night times. It should be activities and programs. Programs and jobs reduce crime. Yes. Not incarceration, not sending somebody 1,000 miles away and they can't even speak the language, and you in prison with Native Americans and Spanish and folks that you never even knew existed before. For this guy to call me and say, "What's a Native American?" He was 18 years old and never heard of a Native American. He's incarcerated with them, and you see how bad they've been treated. So let me shut up and give it back to you, Nick.
No, I didn't want you to shut up, but I wanted you to talk about, again, you. Dr. Lacey, he made you a doctor earlier.
My doctor.
And Nikichi, that's right. Nikichi are on the front lines, working hard, putting your blood, sweat, and tears into the work in terms of trying to shift the narrative, in terms of trying to change the story. Dr. Chapman was on a show, on Dr. Watkins' show yesterday, and talked about how the president of the National Medical Association talked about, we're back to Reconstruction. We are back post-Civil Wars, trying to get our rights, just like Reconstruction. If you cannot be on the front line, maybe you can't. Maybe you cannot participate in every protest or vigil that takes place, but you can. You can certainly support a platform where Roach and Dr. Lacey and Nikichi and Martine have a place to voice us and inform us and inspire us and let us know what it is that we can do to make a difference. And one of the things you certainly can do is call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. You can go to the website at WPFWFM.org, or you can use Cash App. That's $WPFWFM. Text WPFWFM to 801-801. Please take an action. Please don't watch as history is unveiling before us. Please support the station that gives these people a platform. Thank you so much. I'll be back at the lab.
Okay, thank you. We'll take our first caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment, caller?
This is Rick calling long distance from Germany.
Boy, if you wasn't the first one, I'd eat my hat. I knew you'd be there, Rick. How you doing?
How you doing, Roach? I got a question for Nikichi. I understand that the National Guard does not have arrest powers. How are they going to work with the D.C. police if they don't have the power to lock up arrest folk?
Okay, thanks, Rick from Germany. I don't quite have the answer to whether the National Guard has that power or not, but it's not just the National Guard that's been deployed. They've actually federalized the local police or whatever forces. They have FBI agents from around the country who have been given these powers as well. So it's not just the National Guard. And I must say, I don't know the specific law behind exactly what the extent of the powers of the Guard is. But let me tell you, if they want to arrest folk, they go and arrest folk. I mean, I'm just, you know, I and so far, the quote unquote law has not stopped folk from doing much of anything around here these days.
Let me ask you this, Rick. You calling from Stuttgart, Germany. What have you heard? Okay. Because I wanted to ask him, he's still listening. I wanted to ask him, what have you heard in Germany about what's going on in D.C. and in America? What the take is from his perspective, because he's a native Washingtonian living in Germany, and he's watching what's happening. I'd like to know what's going on in Germany, what the people's response is about what they're hearing about in Washington, D.C. But Rick can get back on the line. We'll take our second caller. Question or comment, please. Hello.
Hello, am I on?
You're here. Yes.
I have a comment, and I want to say hello to my good friends and heroes, Roach Brown and Nikichi and Clint Lacey. This is Mark Schindler calling this morning.
Hey, Mark, how you doing? Turkey, how you doing, Turkey?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, everyone.
All right, now.
You know, I'm doing all right, but I was feeling down and angry this morning. I'm feeling down and angry this morning, but I'm feeling better hearing you talk about what's going on in D.C. and calling it out for what it is. I just wanted to add one or two thoughts to what all of you have shared, because I think it's a dark day here in D.C., and I think Clint nailed it. This is very intentional. This isn't about the policy or the substance. We know that prosecuting kids as adults is racist and doesn't do anything for public safety, and the folks who are talking about this know that as well. This is very intentional. But I just want to add one or two things to the context on this. You know, the biggest crime day infiltrated in D.C. was January 6th. And what happened after that, we had attacks on police officers, after we had violent attacks, after we had attacks on our democracy, all of those people were pardoned, all of them. And what didn't happen that day is Trump failed to call in the National Guard when they were needed so desperately on January 6th. So this is just theater and distraction and power and control. And what does it come on top of? It comes on top of Congress preventing the district from accessing $1 billion of its own money for the D.C. budget. So they're complaining about the district not doing enough, even though crime is going down very rapidly, but they're holding $1 billion in local dollars. From us to be able to do the work. And finally, the last thing I want to say is, I have to say I'm very disappointed in our mayor's comments. I know she's trying to walk a fine line, but this is not a time to keep your head down and try to be cautious. This is a time to call out what's happening.
Yes.
This is
an
authoritarian government that is oppressing people all over the country. And what have we just seen? A president taking over law enforcement in the nation's capital. We should all be incredibly alarmed. So I appreciate you all shining a light on this. And I just wanted to add those thoughts to provide a bit more context.
I've been trying to reach you, Mark. Give me a call when the show is over, Mark.
Yeah,
we'll
for those who don't know, Mark used to be with Justice Policy Institute way back in the day, and now he's doing great things over there in Maryland with the criminal justice system there. So thanks for calling in, Mark.
Yeah, Mark, always great to hear you. And I always say it's Mark's fault that I ended up here in D.C. I was in New York, and I think he was behind the curtain there, putting my name out there to come down here. But, Mark, your point was so profound.
If I can take credit for you being in D.C., Clint, that's all I can ask for. I'll call it a day if I can take credit for that.
Give me a call later, Mark. I want to talk to you. You know, just go ahead, Clint. You want to finish what you're saying?
Just the point that Mark made about it shows the hypocrisy when he talks about January 6th and the harm, the hurt, the death, the destruction of that day, right? And nothing. In fact, they were behind it, right? They supported it. They made it happen. And now to weaponize their military apparatus in such a way is just the height of hypocrisy. And I think his point is just really, really profound. Thank you.
You know, this is one of these kind of shows. I'm glad that we're on the fun drive because we're asking folks to contribute to keep us on the air. And this is one of the few stations and programs that you get the real skinny. And no jiggy boogie. We tell it to you like it is and the way it is. And we try to keep it real and upfront. And if we can't, I do this out of respect to one of my mentors, P.D. Green. This guy was one of the most honest, real down there. If his breath stunk, he'd say, man, don't get too close to my mouth stink. He would tell on himself first. You know what I mean? So when you get somebody with that kind of honesty and openness and realness, and because of our relationship with him, we try to keep this show the same way. No jiggy boogie. You get the real deal, the real skinny. And folk, it hurts what's happening in our city. As somebody just said, we're going back to Reconstruction. We back in Reconstruction. We didn't know no cash bail. It's talking about locking up at juveniles. And 95 to 98% of juveniles in the juvenile system, 95% are black.
Yes.
And you're talking about increasing locking up juveniles and taking the trial as adults. You're talking about young black boys and young black girls.
But the sad thing is this has been going on all along. Yeah. We've been paying America, black people in America, we are always paying. Our pain is their gain. We are the ones paying for bail, parole, probation. We can't do anything without being penalized. So it's from the beginning, destroy the black family, destroy the black man, out of fear, hatred, whatever. This is nothing new to us.
Let me just say something real quick, because when Mark came on, it just reminded me back to the old days. And I remember I just recently had a conversation with Charlie Sullivan, who was back in the day. And Charlie, it just reminds me with him and his wife, Pauline, dealing with the prison system for decades upon decades upon decades. This is Black August right now. Black August, where we celebrate issues dealing with prisons and prisoners and the Black Panthers and all. And what Charlie told me was that back in August of 1971, he and his wife Pauline went to Jonathan Jackson's funeral in California, but could not get in because the church was so packed. And that really left an imprint on me, because Charlie and Pauline, you know, little white former priest and nun, going to Jonathan Jackson, the spark of Black August, who called for the liberation of his brother George Jackson from prison and was killed as a result. And that's what sprang from Black August. And that is the theme of WPFW's fundraising drive right now, Black August. And I know I see me and Yuki on there, but I just wanted to bring up about Charlie and Pauline and all of us are fighting for these same issues.
Our real soldiers.
So we got a couple of minutes. Go ahead, Ma. You can do our closing now. We got a couple of
We have some people we want to thank. People are coming in. People are supporting and want you to make sure you still have your platform. We want to thank Lynn from Baltimore. Thank you so much, Lynn, for making your pledge of support on the phone. Thank you so much to Anonymous in Falls Church, Virginia, who made a very generous sustaining pledge. And everyone can be sustaining pledge. You can just give $10, $20, $100, $200, $300 a month, whatever you are comfortable with. We want to thank our colleague who has a show on Thursdays, Renee Bowser from Washington, D.C., for making a generous pledge of support to Crossroads. And that's the caliber of people who work here at WPFW. You got Nikichi and you got Martine and you got Roach, who are warriors on the front lines trying to make things better for all of us. I want to thank Jose from Stanford, Virginia. It's important that we keep supporting. Thank you so much for your comment as well. Folks, you can help close us out stronger than we are now. 202-588-9739. We've got 2 minutes remaining, and then we go into the, other information. But Roach, thank you all so much for being here. Thank you all for keeping the jiggy boogie at a distance. Thank you so much for working so hard.
No jiggy boogie.
No jiggy boogie. We're going to keep it strong. And thank you so much to Dr. Lacey and all the good work. Again, keep WPFW strong so that you can hear what kind of good work is being done and what you may be able to do to help make the world a better place.
I want to just say one more time what Albert Einstein said. The world would not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything. We got the power as the people.
There you go.
We got the power.
Go ahead, Clint. You want to get some closing remarks? We got a minute.
Just real quick, the reference to my good brother, Dr. Roger Mitchell's reference to us being in a reconstruction right now, right? Like what we were in over 100, 50 years ago. So that is real in so many ways in terms of what we're facing and also in terms of what we need to do for ourselves to resist and to build the infrastructure in our village. And so I just am grateful to be here with you all. It's been an honor, Queen Nkechi, Queen Martine, and my great brother, Roach Brown. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, we want to thank everybody who made a donation and who's been listening to the show. Please do something. As my wife said, the world will not be destroyed by those who do evil or bad things, but by those who watch on the sidelines and don't do nothing. People, we got to get together, get off our cans, and do something. All right, and thank you for listening to Crossroads. This has been Roach and Martine, and remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change.
This is Stephanie Wells, Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation. Congress has defunded public media, threatening the survival of television and radio stations that provide trusted news, emergency alerts, and vital community connection. Years of corporate media consolidation and deregulation have taken media out of community hands, while social media platforms cut back on fact-checking, leaving communities vulnerable to misinformation. In this time of social crisis and climate emergencies, local stations provide vital information for keeping our community safe. You can help by supporting and donating to your local community media. This message comes to you in solidarity from the Pacifica Foundation.
The Democratic Republic of the Congo and Rwanda recently signed a peace agreement in Washington under the aegis of the Trump administration. It is supposed to lay the foundation for a minerals deal that would usher in greater U.S. investment in Congo's minerals sector, with Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and others in the billionaire class taking the lead. WPFW, Africa Roll Now Project, Friends of the Congo, and Action for Congo will host a discussion and film screening on Sunday, August 17th, 5 to 7 p.m. at the 14th and V location of Busboys and Poets. The event entitled Peace or Profit, Donald Trump's Minerals Deal in the Congo, will unpack the peace agreement and outline the implications for Africa. Details at Eventbrite on the Friends of the Congo. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
If you're a WPFW supporter, please take a moment and record a testimonial as to why you support Jazz and Justice Radio on our testimonials hotline at 202-588-0796. Messages must be 1 minute or less. It is with your generosity that we are able to build a better world, one broadcast at a time. And we thank you.
DC Jazz Fest happens August 27th to the 31st with Branford Marsalis, Layla Hathaway, Ron Carter, the String Queens, and more, including citywide concerts from downtown to the wharf. Labor Day weekend. Details at DCJazzFest.org to get your jazz on.
Birchmere presents Jazz, Funk, and Soul, featuring Jeff Lorber, Everett Harp, and Paul Jackson Jr., August 13th, Mesa, August 17th, Eric Robinson, August 23rd and 24th, and Shalimar, August 28th. Details at birchmere.com.
Koran Dance Company celebrates its 42nd annual National African Dance and Drum Conference, coming together as one on Labor Day weekend from Friday, August 29th to Sunday, August 31st. The conference workshops will take place at the Washington Marriott Capitol Hill and will be taught by 20-plus master dancers and drummers from Senegal, Mali, Guinea, Liberia, and the Republic of Congo. This year's concert performance will take place on Saturday, August 31st at 8 p.m. at Howard University's Crampton Auditorium and will feature guest artists from across the U.S. and Khan Karan's company and community class family. Details can be found at www.kankoran.org. That's KankoRan.org. Or by calling 202-518-1222.